On today's episode of Physicians Taking Back Medicine, we're talking MOC, that's maintenance of certification, with two doctors who are fighting to make it easier for physicians to practice medicine.
My name is Paul Matthew. I'm an assistant professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School.
Dr. Paul Matthew is a board member with NBPASS, the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons, a recertifying body that was founded in 2015 as an alternative to the American Board of Medical Specialties, or ABMS.
It started at an American Academy of Neurology session on maintenance of certification. I was coming close to the end of my 10 years where I took my exam and I'd have to start participating in MOC or maintenance of certification. I was sitting in this listening session hosted by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, which is one of the boards under the American Board of Medical Specialties. And the person who was speaking was going on and on about the requirements and the modules that needed to be completed and how surveys needed to be given to patients so they could say what a wonderful physician I am. And surveys needed to be given to my colleagues to say how great I am. And everybody in the room just looked around at each other like, why are we doing this? This seems like a lot of busy work and we're paying to do it. So I did ask that question. I said, where's the evidence that this is really improving much of anything? Over time, these questions went unanswered. And with my advocacy training, I thought someone needs to do something. And at that moment, I thought, maybe I'm that someone. So I started a petition, not asking anything unreasonable. It did reach several thousand signatures of psychiatrists and neurologists basically saying, hey, listen, these modules really don't improve patient care. They really don't improve our clinical knowledge. We really shouldn't have to do this. And believe it or not, after all those letters were sent, I never got a single response from any of them. And so at that point, Paul Tierstein, who's a cardiologist out in California, who started the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons. And I guess word travels on the internet and he heard, oh, there's this neurologist who's doing something similar. And Paul Tierstein kindly said, we'd love for you to join the board of directors of the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons. And I've been a board member ever since.
Dr. Matthew points out that the group of founders of NBPASS are not just a rogue group of disgruntled physicians.
There are some pretty big names there, just to rattle a few: Harvard, UCLA, Mayo, NYU, Columbia, Dartmouth. Just so the listeners are aware, physicians who completed their board certification examination before the early 90s were granted lifetime certificates. Really, the only thing they have to do is complete CME, and that's for licensure. So basically, the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons feels the same way, that all of us should play by the same rules, and that if all you need to maintain a license for the grandfathered physicians and do CME, that should be the standard we should all be subjected to. Once you have passed your initial board, we recertify physicians based on completing relevant CME to the specialty in which you are applying to recertify, keeping an active license.
Well, and full disclosure, I am a proud NBPASS diplomat going back to, I guess, about 2015 or 2016, which was right when the mandatory MOC modules came into effect. My big issue was the amount of money that they wanted, and I felt that my license and my ability to practice medicine was really being held hostage just simply because I didn't want to pay what really felt like extortion money to me. And then I was especially offended by the fact that they were doing these listening sessions all over the country. And then they released a publication where they acknowledged the physicians' concerns. And then their end statement was, but we're going to do it anyways. So that really bothered me because I just felt like it's so hard for us physicians to feel like we're being heard and listened to just in general. And now you're our own credentialing body and you're not listening to our concerns. It didn't sit well with me. And so I was so thrilled when I saw that there was an alternate organization. One of the limiting factors, though, I understand that there are some hospitals and insurers that won't accept NBPASS as a recertifying body.
Initially, one of our big stumbling blocks was acceptance. And that has, over time, improved because more and more medical centers and medical schools have realized that maintenance of certification, it's not good for there to be a monopoly. White papers have been released by different organizations, including the Federal Trade Commission, saying that monopolies of this nature are not good for the healthcare markets. Some things that have really been game changers is that the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons has been recognized by some national accrediting institutions. I'm sure many of the listeners will recognize the name the Joint Commission. They'll also recognize NCQA, the National Committee of Quality Assurance. This is an organization that actually, in a way, kind of board certifies insurance companies. So if the NCQA says, oh, yes, the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons is a good credential for primary source verification, then the insurance companies say, well, if they say it's good, then it's good by us. I also wanted to mention primary source verification. When credentialers are looking to credential a new physician, basically they can ask for your MCAT, your license, and all these things. It's kind of like when you're applying for a passport. You can have one item from column A or six items from column B. So obviously the credentialers would much rather have the one item from column A, which is what primary source verification means. So if a credentialer sees that you are board certified by the American Board of Medical Specialties, that tells them you've passed your SEPs, you've graduated from medical school, you've completed an ACGME residency, you passed your initial certification exam. So all of those kind of credentials are roped into an ABMS or an AOA board certification. So NBPS is now also recognized as primary source verification. So these credentials will say, oh, you had that one credential with NBPS. We don't need to ask for all these additional documents. You're good to go.
Another area that you've been working on is state board recognition of NBPass. So Florida, my state, for example, right now, I'm not allowed to advertise myself as board certified because I am no longer certified by ABMS. And it's kind of funny because ABMS came to our board of the Florida Medical Association, and we asked a lot of questions, one of which was, how come if you have a doctor who was board certified with you and recertified, when you search for her name, me, on the website, she comes up as just not even there, as if I never certified and I've never done boards? And he said, oh, we're working on that. And by the first of the year, that'll be fixed. But that was like, I think, 2 years ago now. And so it just looks as if I was never certified and I can't advertise as board certified in family medicine. So right now, that's really a state issue. And I know that that NBPass has been working on that.
You're absolutely right. Oklahoma has led the way. They did pass a law where if you're board certified by the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons, you are able to advertise that you're board certified. My hope and the hope of many of us is that when one state passes a bill of this nature, other states will follow. Unfortunately, many of our colleagues who are not physicians advertising different certifications, some of them having spent just a few months with a specialist now claiming that they are a specialist in that particular specialty. So really to hem and haw over the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons really doesn't make sense when there's much bigger fish to fry in the medical ecosystem.
You're so right. You know, you can be a nurse practitioner or a PA, call yourself board certified. For NPs, they're pretty much, quote, board certified for life. They just have to do some acknowledgement that they're practicing, and it can be volunteer hours. So it is, it's funny. There's a new NP that opened up in my building, and I saw a placard and it said their last name and it said family medicine, and it had their initials, which was MSN, a nurse practitioner. And I thought, well, should be the last name family nursing, because I'm board certified, or I at least was initially board certified in family medicine. And I don't think that that nurse practitioner took that board certification exam that I took to do family medicine.
As you probably know, the ABMS is a very, very wealthy organization with a very large war chest. So anytime bills of any nature are there, there are lobbyists who are aggressively force feeding false narratives. One that they will often bring up saying that as time goes by, physician skills deteriorate if you don't participate in maintenance of certification. But as we all know, no physician practices without any kind of access to greater knowledge. Every physician I know is required to do CME to maintain their license. Every physician I know gets all kinds of periodicals sent to their home, whether it's newsletters or things like that. Most of us, if we have a question in clinic, we'll look at up to date and what's up and coming. I mean, with a pocket computer that we call smartphones, the access to that data is unlimited. And it's not like in the olden days where it was a textbook and once you put that down, that was the end of it. So physician skills decaying makes absolutely no sense. And then I'll use the family practice reference just because I'm speaking to you. For someone who practices zero obstetrics. Does it make sense for that person to be reading articles and taking quizzes on obstetrics? It makes no sense. Similarly, some of the neurology material they'll test me on looking at neuromuscular slides. I can assure you at no point during my clinic days do I take a muscle biopsy, stain it, put it under a slide, and then tell you what the pathology is. So this type of just irrelevant force feeding of knowledge that really does not apply to a particular practice, specialty, or subspecialty, it doesn't make sense. We all run different practices, and we are all aware of what we need to learn and what our deficits are. And that's why we go to CME courses.
And the other thing we should talk about is it's actually having an adverse effect on our physician workforce. We know everybody wants to be a doctor now because of this physician shortage. So that's why we've allowed NP independent practice and PA independent practice in all these states. And yet we're making it more difficult for our physicians to practice medicine. And there was an article that just recently came out, and it was called Anti-Maintenance of Certification Laws and Older Physician Supply. This was published in Economics Letters from November of 2024. And what they found was that states that have outlawed MOC, in other words, they have said that physicians can be board certified by NBPASS instead of requiring them to do ABMS, those states have actually seen an increased supply of older physicians by a significant degree. So what's happening is you have physicians that are maybe reaching towards the end of their career. They've got maybe another good 5 or 10 years left in them, and it's time for them to recertify. And they just don't really want to do the whole ABMS for the exact reasons that you've elucidated. It's been a long time since they've looked at slides, like you said, because that's not something that they do in their practice. Maybe they have a very focused practice. So what happens to these physicians that are approaching retirement, but they still want to work, is whether or not they have to take that board exam or recertify becomes a rate limiting step. And some of them just decide it's just not worth it. I'm going to go ahead and retire. One such physician is Dr. Mark Lopatin.
My name is Mark Lopatin. I am a retired rheumatologist. I'm the author of a book on healthcare entitled Room for Improvement. And I've been a healthcare advocate for a number of years. I finished my residency in 1986. I took my internal medicine board, passed them, took a year off to run a clinic, did my fellowship from 87 to 89, and went to take my boards in 1989, only to discover that the American College of Rheumatology only offered boards every other year. I had to wait until 1990, which was the first year the American Board of Internal Medicine decided that board certification was no longer lifelong. That meant that I had to certify every 10 years, 1990, 2000, 2010, etc. What maintenance of certification was, basically, as far as I'm concerned, it was a money grab by the American Board of Internal Medicine. Their rationale was you shouldn't be keeping current just every 10 years. It should be a continuous process. So what they did was they instituted a program where physicians had to acquire 100 maintenance of certification points every 10 years. Now, to acquire maintenance of certification points, you had to purchase products sold by the American Board of Internal Medicine. Physicians already had to engage in continuing medical education requirements, but these were not initially deemed adequate by the American Board of Internal Medicine. So in addition to obtaining CME credits, we had to complete various modules answering certain questions to earn points, maintain our certification. And we couldn't wait every 10 years to do this. It really hit the fan in 2014 when the American Board of Internal Medicine decided that instead of earning 100 points every 10 years, you had to earn 100 points every 5 years. And this led to all kinds of issues with revolts. Paul Tierstein circulated a petition online, which garnered over 20,000 signatures opposing this. There were 3 articles in Newsweek in 2014 exposing it for the money grab that it was. The Pennsylvania Medical Society issued a statement of no confidence in the American Board of Internal Medicine. It was taken to the AMA. It was a whole issue speaking out against the process by which physicians had to maintain certification. I communicated with the CEO of ABIM, who happened to be a former attending of mine. I sent him three different emails explaining why ABIM was viewed so unfavorably and putting forth a plan for something they could do to improve the situation. I've also written a number of op-eds, basically exposing the situation for what it was and what it actually still is. I don't think it's enough as a healthcare advocate to simply complain about a system that's in place. I put forth a specific proposal for ABIM to improve their product. ABIM did make some changes. They've actually put something in place similar to what I've proposed, but they still insist on a time limit per question. And that makes all the difference in the world because it means that a physician must prep for the board exercise, but ABIM doesn't see it that way. They see it that putting a time limit emulates what's in practice for physicians. And that's simply not true. I tell the story of a patient that I had who was a very complicated patient. She was a rheumatoid arthritis patient on two different medicines for her rheumatoid arthritis. She developed liver failure. And the question was whether or not it was related to one of these medications, neither of which was known for causing liver failure. I spent multiple hours on a Saturday researching whether these medicines could cause the problem, if this was indeed immune-mediated, and what could be done, what other medicines could be used to help this patient without aggravating her liver. I didn't have 4 minutes to answer this question. Unless you're in emergency medicine or in surgery or maybe a couple other specialties, cardiology perhaps, maybe pulmonary, you generally speaking have the time to research things. You're not limited to 4 minutes. And I've pushed this to ABIM repeatedly to no avail. It makes all the difference in the world because the prep time for a board certification exam is months of preparation. That's time away from family. That's time away from practice. There may be time taking a course. It may be time in a foreign city. There's all kinds of things that physicians have to do to prepare for a board exam. And it's one of the contributing factors to physician burnout. So in terms of what I've done, the ultimate step that I took was I retired. I refused to submit to what ABIM was pushing on me after speaking out against it so many times in so many ways. I had to put my money where my mouth was, and I retired. I refused to bow down on bended knee to an organization that was not acting in the best interest of physicians, and more importantly, in the best interest of patients.
Mark, you're in a field that is really quite underserved in medicine. And it's sad when I think about the fact that patients have lost access to a skilled, knowledgeable, caring rheumatologist because the boards have created such an onerous process that you had to make the decision to retire. Do you think that if it were not for this recertification MOC process, that you might have continued working perhaps a few years longer?
Yes, I do. Despite all the bureaucracy in medicine, I would have. If I had been able to take the exam in 89 instead of 90, I likely would have. I want to be clear. It wasn't just the onerous nature of this. It was that I had already taken a stand on this. I had already spoken out. I had written about it. I had done a number of things. And it reached a point where I had to put my money where my mouth was. And I couldn't just speak out against this and then comply with it. I had to put my career on the line. Now, granted, I was close to retirement age. I was 63 at the time. But yes, I would have practiced a few more years.
And you know, you're not alone. And there's a new study out that shows that states that have anti-MOC laws, in other words, they cannot use failure to participate in MOC as criteria for whether you are able to work in hospitals or be credentialed by insurance companies, those states that have set that up are actually seeing a higher number of physicians that are in their later years that may have decided to hang it up early if they were in a state that required MOC or that tied that to their practice. So we are in a physician shortage, and it's sad to think that the MOC issue is restricting patient access to really high quality physician care.
That doesn't surprise me in the least. Physicians have enough to deal with separate from taking care of patients in terms of documenting for documentation's sake, in terms of dealing with insurance companies, in terms of dealing with pharmacy benefit managers, prior authorization, peer-to-peers, all these things that physicians have to deal with that detract from taking care of patients. MOC is just one more thing, and it, for many, myself included, it can be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Based on concerns from physicians like Dr. Lopatin, medical leaders decided to take action to create an alternative recertifying body to the ABIM. Here's Dr. Matthew to share more insights about NBPAS.
Please check out nbpas.org. That's the website for the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons. None of the board members collect a salary. We are all volunteers. The cost of board recertification really just pays for the administrative staff who literally goes through your CME, makes sure it's relevant, and then seals it and says, yes, you are board recertified with the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons. And then a little bit does pay also for advocacy to try to expand access for physicians who are boarded by the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons. So do check it out. There are templated letters, all these resources on the website as well. So if you're thinking about approaching your institution and telling them, hey, listen, accepting the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons will help reduce physician burnout. It'll actually save money for the organization because, again, that's time off that physicians will not be taking to do prep work and all these other things. So they'll be seeing more patients. And also they will not be using their CME budget to pay for these modules as well. So it treats burnout, costs less money. It's a great instrument for physician retention and recruitment. So for all these reasons, it's a great idea. And most importantly, how much does the National Board of Physicians and Surgeons cost the institution? Nothing.
Well, I'm really inspired by the work that you've done. And I think you're a testament to how one person can make a difference, especially when you find other like-minded individuals and you work together. Really, that's what it's going to take for us to change our healthcare system for the better. And I think it all comes back to patient care and focusing on the needs of our patients.
I would encourage everyone in the audience, people say, oh, I'm too busy for this, or, oh, this isn't going to make a difference. But, you know, if you spare just a little bit of time and effort, if everybody felt that way, it leads to a huge collective energy. And you know, that's how change happens.
Thank you so much for listening to Physicians Taking Back Medicine, a new podcast sponsored by Medical Economics. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Bernard, bringing you stories from day-to-day physicians just like you who are working to improve our healthcare system. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next podcast.